Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking to our regular guest today from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, Michelle Reinen, back with us. She's the Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Michelle, great to have you back.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be back.
Yes, great to have you. Also great to have Laura Sutherland with us. Laura is the administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. And Laura, it'll be good to hear your voice. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for having us.
We'll talk about new scams, some old scams with a new twist. We'll also answer your questions. Of course, do you think you may have been scammed? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Again, love to hear from you. Well, it looks like Social Security scams have not been social distancing. What's new on that front?
That's a great point, Larry. They are not behaving in social distancing. You know, for a while there at the beginning of COVID, we saw a little bit of a calming with some of the robocalls, but that did not last long. And so we are continuing to see the Social Security Administration, the imposter, the fake Social Security Administration, calling consumers with threats and fear tactics that their account will be discontinued or deactivated because it's been involved in suspicious activity, and things will be suspended unless you confirm your Social Security number and provide bank account information. They even threaten to seize bank accounts as part of this scheme, and it's the same scam we've talked about for years. But there has also been a variation of the Social Security Administration scam with a COVID twist. They just, you know, want to add the COVID-19 language and fear of the unknown into the scam as well. So, as always, we want consumers to just hang up, disconnect that phone call if they've answered the phone. Don't trust your caller ID, and remember that the federal government is not making random robocalls to consumers and threatening you and your benefits if you don't act immediately during that phone call, regardless of what twist or turn you may hear in the automated call that you're receiving. But we've seen a real increase of these calls, and consumers have reported those to the hotline, and it's happening nationwide as well.
Yeah. And are there some other government agencies also being misrepresented?
Yeah, there certainly are. We're seeing, you know, that the misrepresentation of contact tracers are out there. Scam artists trying to pretend that their health officials in making fear that way is another one. Laura, do you want to expand on some of the other government entities that are also doing some of the scams?
Yes, I let me circle back to the contact tracing scam, because that's important that people understand contact tracers are an important part of stopping the virus. So we do need to answer those calls, but they also can be a scam. And the tricky part about them, Larry, is we always tell you the government doesn't have enough resources to call you out of the blue. So if someone calls you out of the blue, it's probably not the government. Turns out when it comes to a contact tracer, it is the government. There are people working for the state, calling folks, trying to track down who you've been exposed to. So what's important to know about a legitimate contact tracer is that they're not going to ask you for personal identifying information like your Social Security number, any financial information, and they're obviously not going to ask you to pay for anything or give them any money. So if you're on a call with someone and they are identifying themselves as a contact tracer, they're going to ask you some really basic questions: your name, your date of birth, your ethnicity, and they're going to talk to you about who you've been in contact with, let you know that you've been exposed, and also giving you important information about how to self-quarantine. You should take those calls. You just shouldn't stay on a phone call with anybody who asks more pressing information about your social security number, your financial information, and that kind of thing.
Makes good sense. We mentioned on Garden Talk, before we go to the phones, we mentioned on Garden Talk last week that people are getting seeds in the mail that they didn't order from China, I guess. What's the reasoning on that? Laura, do you want to take it?
Yeah, I can take this one. Right. So that is, we are seeing a lot of unsolicited seeds and actually unsolicited other packages and goods that are being mailed to consumers. Mainly you're seeing seeds, and we understand they're coming from China. So why that's happening is hard to know. It's really what we are calling this, and what it looks like is a scam called brushing. And the brushing scam includes when a package containing a small item or a trinket comes into the mail that you did not order, and they attempt by the vendor to bolster the product ratings and increase its visibility online. So basically, they send out a bunch and pretend like it's been ordered so they can say more of it has been ordered than in reality. So that's a brushing scam. When it comes, so that's sort of the unsolicited packages. When it comes to the seeds, it's the same issue. And what we're telling people, which is important, don't plant those seeds. Don't throw them away. If you've already planted them, leave them in place until you receive further guidance from the USDA. Keep the seeds in a sealed packages. Don't open the package. And if possible, retain the original package that you received it in, because it may be helpful to us when we're investigating. And then, most importantly, report those seeds to DadCap. We have an online form that's easy to use, and we encourage people, if they get seeds in the mail, file a complaint with DadCap and fill out the form that's present right on our webpage. Very easy to find. And send the information to us.
All right, there we go. Well, let's take some calls. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. Colin in Viroqua, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Yes, thank you for taking my call. So yesterday I received my credit card bill, and I happened to glance at it and noticed that I was being charged for my Amazon Prime card, or whatever you want to say. And I thought I had canceled that like 3 months ago. So I got online, called the Amazon Prime customer service, and the man, who did not speak very good English, told me I needed to go to Walgreens, Walmart, and buy this pink Amazon credit card or gift card, get the code on the back, and they would refund the $50 for the card and the 3 months that they've been charging my Amazon Prime. And he wanted me to do this right now or go online and order it right now. And he wanted my credit card, the last four digits of my credit card number that it was being charged to. And I was just like, man, this doesn't sound right to me.
No, it doesn't sound right to me either. I don't know. Michelle, let's go to you.
Yeah, no, that sounds a lot like it has all sorts of imposter scam, phone call twist to it, and phishing scheme twist to it. But what amazes me is that I thought I heard you say you called them. So I'm curious, you know, if possibly you got an imposter phone number that was listed, because often scammers will try and buy up lookalike websites and listings online and kind of invert phone numbers to trick you into phoning them, and then they act like that party. But they want you to do a lot of the actions that we see related to different scams, where go get a gift card and read us the information and the PIN off the back and verify this information. So I would you know, if you have any documentation from when you originally tried to cancel, work with your credit card company on canceling it through them, or log into your Amazon account and try and do a cancellation online using you typing in the information directly into the Amazon versus using any links or anything you're finding on Google or direction there. But you can also, if you're not getting anywhere or able to cancel, use consumer protection so we can help communicate with Amazon. But I would certainly try getting in touch with them using different information, because it sounds like you may have encountered a scam artist impersonating themselves as Amazon Prime.
Yeah. And as you say, Michelle, she could simply call her credit card company and have them, hey, take that off. That's not right.
Right.
To begin with, and then follow up.
Yep, you have 60 days from the time that something appears on your credit card bill to dispute those charges and interact with them, and they can also help try and problem solve certain issues with companies as well. So it would be worthwhile to get them involved.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks a lot for calling. Good luck. Appreciate it. Kay in Mequonago, it's your turn. Hi, Kay.
Hi, how are you? I'm glad you're taking my call. I filed my income tax about 3 weeks ago, about a week before the deadline, and 2 days ago in the mail, I got this IRS letterhead thing with a letter in it saying that they can't give me my refund until they can tell that I'm really who I am. And they want me to call a number and give them a bunch of information from the taxes I just filed, and then last year and possibly the year before, different forms that come on your income tax. And they say that I have 30 days to do this. If I don't do it, I may not get my return at all. And there might be more questions. And the letterhead says that it's the IRS, but I'm just wondering. I've never gotten anything like this before, and I'm wondering if it's really what it says it is.
You know, that
Laura,
that
go ahead.
Really, yeah, Larry, thanks. That's a great question, and I think it's good for you to be incredulous and be cautious about these things. But the government typically does correspond with you by letter and a 30-day turnaround time seems reasonable. What I would suggest is to go on IRS's website and get a number that you trust and that you know is affiliated with them, and call that number and verify that they are sending out these letters and this is a legitimate request from the government. I wouldn't rely necessarily on the information in the letter. I would go to the website and verify that this is a valid letter. What do you think, Michelle?
Yeah, I fully support that. And a lot of times the letter you receive will have a form number on it because they have very specific letters. And yours sounds similar to one where they might be questioning the potential of identity theft or dual filing. And so it's a precaution in that aspect of things. But you could go to the IRS.gov website. They usually list all their form numbers and instructions, and then also, you know, how to interact and ask questions. And I would use that reliable source information versus using the number in the letter.
Yeah, that makes really good sense. Kay, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in, too, 1-800-642-1234, the number to call, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller, Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today as we take a look at consumer scams with our two guests, Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland from the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Great to have both of them with us. Questions, again, give a call, 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's take another call. Mary Ann in Superior, it's your turn. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I recently received a telephone call in regards to my new Medicare card, and the gentleman was extremely forceful with me. He wanted to know if I had received my new Medicare card, and I said I don't answer that over the telephone. And then he asked me again very, very forcefully, and I just hung up. I have received a new Medicare card, and it was months and months ago. But I didn't know if that was another way to get you to respond and then find out about your Medicare number.
Yeah, it sounds like it might be a scam.
Sorry, Larry. Yeah, anytime anyone's being forceful with you and demanding of information, that's a really good warning sign. And I'm really happy Marianne responded in the way that she did by never handing out that information. Because while the Medicare number is no longer your Social Security number, it still has tremendous value, and it's not a number that you want to hand out. And there's no reason anyone should be calling to validate you received a new card, especially months later. So that was a great response, and something I would encourage others to do as well.
And thanks very much for calling, Marianne. Patrice, who's in her RV in Wisconsin. Hi, Patrice.
Hi, thank you. And I have become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. When I drive through Wisconsin, I get to listen to you. And
oh, we lost her. Oh, nuts. Well, Patrice, I tell you what, try to call back. She's got some information relating to a scam with Apple. Let's go to Reed in La Crosse. Reed, hello.
Larry. Oops, hi, Larry.
Hi.
I had been listening to the FCC's monthly consumer outreach call last month, and they mentioned the fact they had an FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, speaker on, and they mentioned the fact that there are some actual physical COVID testing sites set up, a drive-through testing sites that have been set up as a scam, and so they have advised people, you know, check with your health department to make sure it's legitimate.
Good point. And Laura, are you familiar with that?
We are familiar with that. We have not heard of that scam actually making it into Wisconsin. We've heard about that happening in the middle of the country. But certainly it would be a very serious scam, right, if you went to a medical testing site that was, in fact, not a testing site and they were taking your data that way. But there are resources where you can find legitimate testing sites in Wisconsin on the government and on at the DOA and the Department of Administration, that is. And so, as we often say, use trusted information when you're going, trusted sources of information to find out about this. So yes, there are lots of sites like here in Dane County. You can go to the Alliance Center. There are other sites around the state, and those sites, you can go to your county health organization to find out legitimate testing sites in your county. And you can also go to Wisconsin.gov, where there's a whole page for COVID-19, giving you information about this and many other things. So before you get tested, go to a trusted source of information about a legitimate testing site.
All right. Thank you, Reed. Appreciate it. Patrice, do we have you back?
I'm here. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
So last year, my data must have been breached. And I've always known that when I have used original passwords and never changed them. And I mean, it was like an easy sequence for anybody to find. So suddenly Netflix, Groupon from way back when, I think they notified me and that my accounts were hacked, I guess is the term. So, all right, I went and changed my passwords. So I'm sharing that with everybody. Just make sure you have strong passwords. But shortly thereafter, I got a call from who I thought was Apple Care for my Mac computer, and that guy sounded so legit that he actually got as far as screen sharing with me. You know what? They have a service that if you have a problem with your computer, the Apple Care warranty people will share your computer. But my friend was sitting next to me and suddenly felt it sounded too fishy. He immediately called the real Apple Care, and that lady said, hang up. So again, what she said is Apple Care never calls you. And that's kind of a common theme I've heard some of your guests share. And, you know, that government entities don't call us. So then, and I got away with from that one. The guy did not get my data. Now, fast forward to 2 days ago, I get a call from my normal area code from Commonwealth Edison, our electric company in Illinois. And I don't know, I wasn't on my toes, and I'm starting to give information. And then when I asked the question, they hung up on me. So I think what my solution is if anybody calls me, I'm just going to say, may I have your name and phone number, I'll call you back, and what's the website? That's what my solution would be, and I'd love to hear your comments, and thank you for allowing my comments.
All right. Thank you, Patrice. Well, Michelle, is that a good idea, what Patrice suggests?
I mean, that is certainly one idea, to challenge them with providing information. If anyone calls that is very government, large corporation-wise, we usually encourage you to disconnect the phone call and not engage. But if you're just getting info from them and then you're curious, we would not want you to use that information to make the call back. We'd want you to go find a reliable source to make contact and inquire. It sounds like she's being hit with a couple different scams, the tech support scam that could either be Microsoft calling or Apple Care. It has expanded to the Apple, the Mac world as well, where they are trying to support your computer for a low fee or through a program that you may already belong to because they want access. And then it sounds like the utility scam tried to hit where they're spoofing the phone number, making it look like it's coming from your same area code and using a name of a utility company in that area code to try and make a connection and have you hand over information. So our baseline advice is always to just not answer phone numbers you don't recognize. Let them go to your voicemail. If it's important and legitimate, they'll likely leave you a message, and you can then use your own information to follow. And remember spoofing. They can make that caller ID look like anything they want it to, and you need to be protective of that and cautious of trusting that caller ID right now. And I think a third piece is check with your telecommunications provider, your phone provider, and see what programs they have in place to do call scam blocking for you. So some of these things can be blocked and not come through, because that's come a long way in the last year through some different federal legislation and actions that the telecommunications providers are taking. So I would also encourage making contact there to see what they can do to enhance that blocking for you.
Mm-hmm. And Patrice, thank you so much. Appreciate your call. Well, let's take a call from Paul next in Madison. Paul, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Michelle. Hi, Laura. Thank you very much for taking my call. I wanted to share a story of a successful resolution of a scam. I ordered a pair of Bose headphones on the internet, and it seemed like a really good deal. And it took a long time to get here, several weeks. But by the time they got here, they had transitioned from Bose to Sony, and they were not what I ordered. And I spent weeks in emails with them trying to resolve the issue, you know, telling them I want to send these back and get the Bose headphones that I ordered. Well, they said, well, couldn't you just keep them and give them to somebody as a gift, or we'll give you 10% of your price back. Well, we went through our credit union finally and asked them to resolve the issue for us. And it took a long time, and it didn't seem like it was going to be resolved because at one point they said it doesn't meet this criterion. But we just got a letter saying the $150 has been put back in your account.
Hmm. Well, there's a success story, Laura.
That's right. Persistence pays, it sounds like. I was curious to hear where you bought those from. It sounds more like they messed up and they were trying to take advantage of that situation than an outright scammer. But good for you for pressing on and getting what you wanted out of that. And you know, it really does often take that you read the fine print, you understand your rights with respect to refunds and returns, and that you exercise those rights as they're explained to you. And then, of course, you went to the credit union. Those are all the things that you need to do sometimes to make sure that you get your money back or you get the product that you're entitled to. So it sounds like you did the right thing. I'm sorry it took so long and it was frustrating, but I'm glad to hear it resolved well.
Yes, thanks, Paul. Appreciate it. Al in Green Bay will give you a chance. Hi, Al.
Hey, thanks, Larry, for taking my call. So I'm a U.S. Cellular customer, and I've noticed in, I don't know, the last year, maybe less than that, the number of scam calls has really gone down. And I understand that there was a federal-level move that essentially said to the cellular providers, you got to do something about this. Is that right?
Michelle, do you know?
Yeah. Oh,
or Laura?
Well, I'll start and Laura can pick it up. But yeah, at the end of last year, President Trump signed what's called the TRACED Act, and that put in place a requirement that telecommunication providers put in an authentication protocol that they need to validate, really, I'm really simplifying it, but that they need to validate the source of the phone number and where it's coming from, or block those numbers if they can't confirm and get it past the authentication protocol. So it started with that digital lines and VoIP lines, and it has a slower rollout to the landlines, but we expected to see a really big dramatic drop in calls in 2020, and so it's great to hear that you are receiving that drop, and that's where we encourage consumers who are still seeing a number of scam calls to contact their provider and see what kind of call blocking systems they have out there. And I'll let Laura expand from there on anything she wants to add.
No, I think that's it. I'm glad to hear that we are seeing that dip. They projected in about 6 months we should see a dip, and it sounds like you're experiencing that. So fantastic.
Yeah, you bet. Al, thanks very much for calling. Lynn in Ashland, on to you now. Hi, Lynn.
Yes, good morning. See, I got a letter here a while back. It's from the DOT Compliance Group. And I don't know what, I've had a DOT number in the past, but I've been retired for, I don't know, 8 years. And it was before that, I don't know how many years, that I needed a DOT number. Well, the first thing they do, and this is the sad part about it, is they always got to put italicized wording here that says $1,000 a day if I fail to file again. And then it says, or up to $10,000. So I called this group, and I got a gal on, and I said, well, what is with the penalties? And I haven't had the need for one of these licenses for years. And she says, well, you're still on our list, and you have to file biennially, which I didn't understand that. And so, but I said, so how do I get off the list? And she says, well, we can do that for you for $140-some. And so I said, well, what happens if I don't do anything? She says, well, you'll just stay on the list. And I thought, well, then why the big hoopla about the fine and everything else? Can you maybe, have you heard of this before? Just a minute. At the bottom of the page, it says the DOT Compliance Group is not affiliated with the U.S. Department of Transportation.
Hmm. Oh, so it's that's a federal or is that federal or state? It sounds like that's federal.
Yeah, it sounds like federal. Yeah.
Yeah. So if that sounds like a scam to me, I don't know if Michelle thinks differently, but that if you have to pay to remove yourself from a list, then that's problematic. So what I think you should do is file a complaint with the Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection. The bottom, what sort of tipped it off for us is the bottom of that letter says that we are not affiliated with DOT, but it sounds like that's not entirely clear to you until they write that. So that's in their mind, probably their get out of jail free card that they've explicitly said that they aren't affiliated with DOT, but you can't really tell. They're using a lot of information that's familiar to you, like the fact that you used to have this number and that you always registered. And so all of that is familiar to you. That's how scams work. They take a little bit of information you know, and then they expand on it, and then they try to extract money from you, right? So, and the example you gave is that either you pay fines or you pay money to get off the list. So there's no way you can interact with this company without paying money. And the last thing I would say that would tell you that it's probably a scam is that if it's using the term fine and they're not affiliated with the government, then that is a scam. Obviously, the government finds you. The government assesses forfeitures. Companies don't fine you. So my suggestion is you file a complaint and let us follow up on that, because if you got it, that means they have a list and they're mailing it to everybody on that list and they're trying to get them to pay money. So we appreciate that call.
And how do we do that? How does Lynn go ahead and get that information? He can do
right.
it by phone, or
he could call our 1-800 number at 422-7128, or he could go to our website and fill out a complaint, which is dacp.wi.gov.
All right. There you go, Lynn. Again, it's 800-422-7128 or datcp.wi.gov to get a form, complaint form. Thanks for calling. Lyman in McFarland, your turn. Hi, Lyman.
Hi there. I got a phone call this morning and as soon as I heard the word Social Security, I hung up. My question is, should I have tried to do something to help combat this, like stay on the line until I got a human and try to find out some information that can be traced?
What do you think, Michelle?
I think what you did is just perfectly fine. Hang up when you get those calls so you don't run the risk of having them hook you and pull you in on anything that they may say. And just kind of get you off kilter there. But one thing you could do if you have caller ID is report it to Consumer Protection with the phone number they're using. So that can be tracked and reported to the federal government. It might be a spoofed number, but it might be a number that's able to be traced back as well. So it's always of value there. Plus, all those numbers that get reported are published daily on what's called like a blacklist, and a lot of these apps use that information to list those as scam calls, and so that helps with the blocking apps that are out there as well. So it's always really important to just report any information you are able to collect, but you don't need to stay on the line to do that.
There you go, Lyman. Thank you so much. Mona in Madison, your turn. Hi, Mona.
Hi. I have a question about Facebook and how people are connecting that to your emails to send you scam emails. I belong to a lot. I'm a Welsh language learner. I belong to a lot of Welsh groups on Facebook and also groups about the country of Wales. And I got one of those Nigerian prince letters in my email box written in Welsh. And his Welsh was no better than his English. But How common is that for them to make that crossover connection between Facebook and your email? Hmm. And how can you help prevent that? I never heard of anyone else getting this, but it was just really weird, but funny.
Yeah.
So it's a good question, and Michelle might have some thoughts on this. I would say, first and foremost, you should check your privacy settings on Facebook. Make sure you're sharing. So in other words, you can share your phone number and your email and all kinds of things on Facebook unknowingly. So I would make sure your privacy settings are set in a way that you want them to be set. I personally would set them sharing no personal information, not my phone number, not my email, any of that. And also, Facebook can send you what's called push notifications. So I don't know if you get those, but you can turn that setting off. There's ways in which you can have the most stringent privacy settings, and that should impact it somewhat. But the reality is there are people on Facebook that troll for information and utilize that information and then target you with that information because they know a little bit about you, and it's a way to get you to trust them and bring you into their scam. So the best way to deal with that is to share less information and be cognizant of what you're sharing online so you aren't targeted. Now, of course, if you're in a group of people that you know and you're sharing Welsh information and it's fun, you know, that is the purpose of Facebook, and there's only so much limitation you can put on what you're sharing and still get what you want out of that experience. But that is sort of the trade-off, that there are people out there using that information to contact you. So beyond doing the privacy settings, what are your thoughts on that, Michelle? Would you do something else?
I think the only thing I'd add to the suggestion you have is to make sure you know how you're using Facebook as it relates to any other apps you might be connected with, and that you aren't allowing yourself to log in and to apps directly from Facebook or having that automatic, that you are doing that individually. Because if you just keep connecting yourself back, it's just a lot of data compounding and a lot of connections there that can be happening. So be purposeful in your choices versus all the automatic connections and logins that can happen.
Yeah, there you go, Mona. Thank you so much for calling. Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland, our guests today from the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at consumer scams on the Ideas Network now with our two guests, Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland from the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in. A couple of open lines for you at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's take another call. Roger in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Roger.
Hi. I put one of the call blocking apps on my phone and immediately got 90% fewer calls. And I've decided that I'm going to turn that into a new hobby. And I'll ask other people to join me in this hobby. I actually answer every phone call I get. Some of them are robocalls or other kinds of nefarious calls, and I report those immediately. And so for thousands of people, that phone number is now on a block list and becomes much less useful to whoever's using it.
Yeah. What do you think of that idea, Michelle?
Absolutely. When that information is turned in, it is helpful to many with that blacklist that we mentioned where the apps are using that information. We just always really caution consumers to be careful when answering the calls that they don't get pulled in to whatever the scam artist's ploy is. So we just ask if you join in the hobby that you keep those those barriers up, you know, and remain very cautious there in providing or sharing any information, as well as we have seen and learned in the past that some of these scams are just lead generation scams, and that means they're calling you to see if you will answer and potentially engage with the scammer, and then that information gets turned around and sold to the next scammer, and you can see an increase in calls as a result, because they may not be random dialed calls as they are targeted off this lead list. So you could potentially run the risk of seeing this increase from targeted scams as it relates to lead generation, as opposed to all the automated robocall scams. So there might be a balance there to watch as it relates to forming this as a hobby.
Yeah, there you go, Roger. Thank you so much for calling. Bruce in Holman, it's your turn. Hi, Bruce.
Yeah, thank you. I have a very good friend who fell for an internet consumer scam. He found a website that had a large amount of real high-end merchandise, you know, items between, I suppose, $500 and $1,000, things like big grills, patio furniture, tools, you know, nice shiny stuff. And he ordered I won't use the brand name, but a major brand multi-tool set, like a duffel with 20 rechargeable tools in it, well over $500. And everything on that website was $99. And it was all coming from China. Supposedly, this outfit was in China. They had real sketchy contact information. He ordered it. He waited weeks. He had a tracking number they gave him, but it showed that everything was in a warehouse in Singapore someplace. Weeks later, it showed that everything was in Los Angeles in a warehouse someplace. And then finally, supposedly, a box got delivered to an address in Alabama. I'm obviously in Wisconsin, and so is he. And he's having trouble with his credit card company because they said, well, your box was delivered. Yeah, but it wasn't delivered to him. And there are other websites like this. They're all originating out of China, and they have tremendous merchandise, and it's all like the same price, $89, $99. How can you go wrong? So this is an example of if it looks too good to be true, it probably isn't true. And I've seen reports on this website, and other people have had the same thing happen. They order something, and if they get anything, it's just a box with a piece of junk in it.
Hmm. Well, Laura, comment on that?
That's unfortunate. And I think the other issue is it's hard to tell that the websites are originating out of the country when you're on some of these websites, and you don't realize that the product is coming all the way from China until you've already submitted your credit card and that kind of thing. So, you know, what I would encourage folks to do when they're shopping online is to be very vigilant about the return policies, using a secure method of payment, anything that says that it's going to come in a certain amount of time, that they adhere to that, and if they don't, then you cancel your payment either through PayPal or some other form of secure payment methodology. And you use a credit card, obviously, that also has fraud protection on it. And that's probably the best way to do it. We do have a mail order law in this state, and if you are reported to have to, if the company is telling you when the product is going to come, they have obligations that they meet that timeline. And if they don't meet that timeline, they provide you with a refund, or they give you an affirmative timeline of when it's going to come. So there are statutory protections for people who are ordering products like that. So, but at very base, check the fine print, check the refund policy, use a credit card or a method of payment that's protected. And if it doesn't come when they say it's going to come, I would go ahead and cancel and go elsewhere.
Yeah, there you go. Bruce, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. You could join in too, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Sue in Beloit next. Hi, Sue.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I got nabbed by an internet scam for antibacterial wipes. And this was a few months ago when everybody was just desperate to find them. And so I went ahead and ordered them. Everything looked legit. And then when I got the response, Mike, I have a thing on anti-fraud thing on my credit card to let me know that the charge had been placed. It was to a really odd website, or really odd. It was actually an obscene word for where it was. And so I called my credit card company, and they said that place was legit, but they had complaints that nobody gets their merchandise. So what I would say is be sure before you order online to, look for reviews, because when I did afterwards look for reviews, of course, everybody said, don't order from these people. They don't send you the merchandise. Fortunately, I was able to block them from ever using my number again. But just something I wanted to suggest to other people is before you order something off the internet, just if you look for reviews, normally you'll find some, like this is legit, or don't order from these people. You get all the complaints for sure.
Yeah. Michelle, a comment?
Great tip. We always want to encourage consumers to check things out, do their research before they engage, if they're able to. It's not always thought about when you're just buying, the basics type situation. But if you're going to do business with someone or something that's unfamiliar to you, using that search engine, whichever is your preferred one, and going ahead and scam, complaints, reviews, attach that to the company name and seeing what you'll get back. Call Consumer Protection as well if you're going to engage with a landlord, tenant, home improvement, anything like that, so we can let you know if we've had complaints. But it's a great first step and can save a lot of grief.
Yeah, for sure. Keith in Greendale, it's your turn now. Hi, Keith.
Hi, just have a comment about my technique for avoiding fraud. I had a call from my bank. They use a third-party company to deal with fraud. So when they called me, I said thank you and hung up. And then I called my bank and asked to be connected to them directly. That way, and you can do this with anybody that calls you, your cell phone company, any company. This way, you just know for sure that you're talking to that company and not someone else.
Yeah, Keith, Laura, I think that's good advice.
Yeah, it's great advice, and I think it's a smart decision. So thanks for sharing that with us. I think it is the refrain that we always give: know your sources of information and make sure that you're initiating them with trusted sources. So going through your bank is a brilliant way to do that. So thanks for sharing that with us.
Yes, thank you. Sandy in Cumberland, your turn. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I had a rather interesting call, and I'm not sure, I don't really think it's a scam, but I would be interested to know if anyone else has had the call. A young lady called, and she said, hello, and she identified herself. She talked very fast. I did not get her name or who she represented, but she asked me if I had ordered my mail-in ballot yet. And I said, no, that wouldn't be necessary because I would be going to my poll to vote. And she said, oh, but she said, that's very dangerous now in this time of COVID. And I said, well, my dear, you need to know that no one is more concerned about my health than I am, and I will be wearing a mask and social distancing. And at that point, I thought, I'm not sure this is going to go anywhere. So I hung up. So I'm just curious about something like that. Is that something that's happening to other people? Because I haven't talked to anyone who's had the experience.
Has that come up, Michelle? Are you getting any complaints on that?
I can't say that I have heard of that, but at the same time, I could say that I'm not certain it would be a scam so much as I know that there are interested parties in making sure that the vote is out and everyone is voting and has that opportunity and is doing it in the safest fashion for each individual. So there are time frames for making requests for mail-in ballots and absentee balloting and that kind of thing. So we do see in political voting years an increase in those types of calls, political surveys, politician calls encouraging the votes and things. And those are not covered by the do not call list unless they're trying to sell you something. So just be cautious. Don't hand out personal information. And that's the measure I would use.
Talking today with Michelle Reinen, Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, Laura Sutherland, Administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection within our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protection. They'll be with us right up till 12:30 today. We'll take a look at the news, find out what else is in store for us on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be right back. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here taking a look at consumer scams with our two guests, Laura Sutherland, Administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Michelle Reinen is the Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. So, do you need advice on how to handle a consumer problem? Do you think you may have been scammed? Give a call at 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. A listener called to remind people that some Social Security workers are working from home, so some calls may be legit. Laura, and that is true, is it not?
Yes. That some Social Security calls are coming from the Social Security Administration. I do think, though, when you're receiving calls of that nature, you should still ensure that call is a legitimate one. Michelle, are you familiar with the Social Security Administration making calls right now?
Well, my understanding of this is also that they'd be returning a phone call, that they aren't contacting you out of the blue, threatening your suspension of your number and benefits and demanding payment. They wouldn't ask you to verify your number all off the cuff of the call, but you would have inquired to the administration about some issue, and because workers are working from home, they'd be returning calls because they may not be there live to answer them. So you'd, again, want to be very cautious and prompt them, asking them why they're contacting you and make sure that information aligns.
Yeah. Kathy and Racine, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Kathy.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have two things. When I do get a robocall or something, if it's a live person, I'll ask them if they have a distribution list and to take my name off the list, and they kind of get mad, but then they hang up right away. So that's been lucky for me. The second thing is my credit card was compromised earlier in the year, and I was receiving ordering a product, and it came from overseas. So I was trying to figure out what I could do. So if I got to a website looking for something, I actually scrolled all the way down to the bottom of the website and look under the terms of service or the privacy policy, and I would try to figure out where, if I didn't like the product, where would I be sending it to or where it was coming from. And a lot of times, if you can see if it's coming from the United States, that was okay. But if there was something that was overseas or something, and that was just something simple I found, and I don't know how accurate that is, but it seemed to help me a little bit. But you really got to search through the terms of service and everything. It's like a legal document, but all I'm doing is scanning for foreign words or, you know, something over in Europe.
Laura, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think that's a good idea to be familiar with the terms of service and be familiar with the company. You can also do your homework about a particular entity online to see if there are any complaints, to see if there are any scams, you know, that kind of thing. And if your credit card has been compromised, you know, we would encourage you to go ahead and check out a credit report. You can get a free credit report from any of the credit reporting agencies right now. And if you've experienced a breach of that nature, it's just a good practice to go ahead and make sure nothing else has happened. So we would encourage you to do something like that as well.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, thank you for calling. Elaine in New Glarus, it's your turn. Hi, Elaine.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I have historically bad cell phone service, and we seem to be paying the same amount every month anyway. You know, bills can be inaccurate, but the service seems to be getting worse and worse for all of us, I would guess. At my house, it's particularly bad. What advice can you give? I mean, I've been waiting online to call the cell phone company, and I talk for a couple hours to people. There seems to be no solution. Is there any financial solution to any of that?
Michelle?
Well, the service coverage issue is a difficult one, and many companies are changing and merging or buying, and that can change things as well. What Consumer Protection gets involved in is the representations that are made to you when you're entering into your contract, that the terms of the contract are being honored, that billing is communicated to you clearly, and that there aren't price increases without notices. And so those are all issues that you can certainly file a complaint. Quality of coverage issues gets more difficult because we need to figure out why that is. Is it that they can't even provide what they've represented to you, or is there something else going on? So you can always file a complaint in regards to that with us as well, so we can take a look at it. But if you have billing inaccuracies, again, a big concern that we'd want to be looking at and knowing about. Is there a financial penalty to them from you? You know, as I understood what you were asking, that's really, again, sitting on hold with them and looking at your plan and seeing if you're getting what you should and having that conversation. And if you're not getting a resolution, maybe filing that complaint with us. But it is a more difficult area in those specifics. So I don't have a definite one way or the other type of answer for you on that.
Oh, there we go. Elaine, thanks so much for calling. Yeah, I think my longest stretch is 5 hours waiting on hold. But it was for, you know, $700. I finally got through and I got the money. I got it taken care of. But it is a very frustrating whole process, for sure. Part of the CARES Act was a six-month forbearance on student loans. Any details on that?
Yes, so that is, you're right, that is a great benefit for student loan borrowers, and there are a couple things that people should know about that. One is, in order to be eligible for it, you don't have to do anything. So that's where the scammers come in. If you're getting a call saying, file this application in order to get your student loan relief from the CARES Act, that's a scam, and you should hang up, ignore it, that pop-up, that email, that call, or whatever it is. Anybody who's entitled to this is being unilaterally put into the program by the government. The other thing you should know about that relief is that it doesn't cover all federal loans. So while you don't need to do anything to get the relief, you do need to call your servicer and make sure you understand which loans are covered and which loans aren't, because the loans that aren't covered, you need to still keep paying on them. The loans that are covered, they are in forbearance and no interest is being accrued and you don't have to pay. But naturally, you need to know which ones are and which ones aren't, so you are paying on the ones that you should be paying on. And also, if you can still pay, you can still pay and get them taken out of forbearance. And the beauty of that is
If you're not accruing interest, you're paying on the principal right now. So we encourage everybody to call their student loan servicers, figure out what's covered, what's not, and what payment works for you in particular. And the other thing that I'll tell you, which is great news, is that there's a hotline, a free hotline, that is available. It's been set up by Ascendium Education Services, a company here in Wisconsin, and the Wisconsin Student Coalition on Student Debt. And that hotline can walk you through the relief that's available to you with the CARES Act. And you get to talk to a human being, which is great. And there are not 5-hour wait lines either, Larry. So, so we really encourage people to take advantage of that number. And I'll give it to you really quick. It's 833-589-0750, and it's Monday through Friday, 8 to 4:30. Really knowledgeable folks on that, on the other end of that call from Ascendium, which is a loan servicer. They won't be able to log into your account specifically, but they'll be able to tell you all that you need to know to, and how to get that information. And then lastly, I would just say the relief that I'm talking about under the CARES Act lasts until September 30th. So there was an extension of that. And after September 30th, all the regular payment needs will be back in order. But I encourage folks to call that 800 number and get more information.
It's 833-589-0750, right?
That's right. Good memory.
All right. Well, I wrote it down to be perfectly honest.
Okay.
Ginny and Madison will give you a chance now. Hi, Ginny.
Hi. The beginning of June, I got an email from Amazon saying that my email address had been changed in my Amazon account. I didn't even remember I had an Amazon account. That's how little I used it. But I finally figured out that I had been hacked. And so at that time, you couldn't call customer service at Amazon. It wasn't taking calls. But eventually, I was able to get the customer service. They determined that, yes, my account had been hacked. They gave me directions on how to reinstate it. And it didn't really work because it required a second verification to a phone number that was not my own. So still, I couldn't get into my account. I finally found somebody in customer service who fixed it for me. That night, I went to close my account so I would get rid of this, and lo and behold, it was hacked again by the same, and they used the same email address that they did originally.
No.
So then I called customer service, and now I'm right back where I started from.
Oh, Michelle, comment.
Seven or eight phone calls I've made to get rid of the address.
Yeah, you're taking the right steps, working with Amazon directly to get control of that and getting it closed, and maybe in working with them on the phone this next time when you do get through, and I know that's difficult during this time, is to have them close it right away. But someone's able, who's in there, is able to monitor things and what's happening, because they're going to get a notification of the change that you've made the same way you did. If that email's tied there, is likely what's happening there. And so, I think the only thing I can really provide is for you to continue working with them. If you need to, file a complaint with Consumer Protection so our team can assist with that communication there. But then for all the other listeners is to try and continue with these types of accounts, even when they go dormant on you, is to keep those passwords changed, continue to update them and alter them. So whatever breaches may happen where you have like passwords for different accounts, and these scam artists and hackers just try and use that information with these very popular accounts, the email and a password they may have obtained from something else and to gain access. So it's always really important to try and change things and keep them up to date, especially if you're ever notified that you've been impacted by a breach of information and you're using like passwords in different areas.
Yeah. Ginny, thank you very much for calling. Deborah in Fond du Lac. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Last year, I ordered myself what I thought was one Christmas tree from Amazon. And during the weeks before Christmas, I ended up with three big Christmas trees. And I called them, and they would listen to me, and then they'd send me to someone else. This is Amazon. And then they'd send me to someone else. And then they'd say, oh, you need to speak with the people in the stock room or something, and it has to come back as a misorder. I said, fine. So then they said, they'll call you. Well, this has been going on for months. They never call me. There are two or three times where I actually got as far as having UPS come to get the two boxes, and UPS never comes. So I am, meanwhile, I have an Amazon credit card, of which I never requested, but I get a bill, and, you know, I'm paying the minimum just so that the interest doesn't build up. And I just am overwhelmed, and I have simply had it. So what should I do?
Wow.
Well, that sounds awful. I think what I would suggest you do is file a complaint and see if we can help you navigate and mediate that issue. I'm a little concerned that you have a credit card that you didn't request and that you're paying minimum dues on it. I suspect that's because there's an annual fee that's affiliated with it, and maybe that's what you're paying. But if you didn't request it, you shouldn't be paying it, and it should be canceled. And that would potentially be of concern to us. So why don't you do this? Why don't you call our 800 number and file a complaint and see if we can help you address this with Amazon? And with respect to the trees, if you're not being charged and you don't want them anymore, I would just donate them and give up. I mean, if you try to give them back and they don't want them, you know, my guess is it's probably more expensive for them to try to get them back than to you know, have them back. So you might as well just donate them to somebody else if you haven't been charged for them.
Yeah. And the number to call for filing a complaint is 1-800-422-7128. That number I've remembered.
Okay. I thought as much. I am impressed by that, too.
Thank you, Deborah, for calling. Appreciate it. You know, there was also a moratorium on utility shutoffs. Where does that stand, and what happens to consumers when this ends?
Well, the moratorium is set up by the Public Service Commission, a state agency that we have, and they've extended that on utility shutoffs for residential customers through September 1st. So if someone is struggling to pay their utility bills, they won't be disconnected at this point in time if they're unable to do that. But this isn't a waiver you're still responsible for your utility bill payment. If you're struggling there are different resources available that one might want to tap into in their community. Contact their utility company and communicate with them. Find out what options they may have for payment plans, for delinquent payments. But again, that goes through September 1st, that utility shutoffs won't happen if you're behind there. But it's important to know that what ties with this that we always get concerned about is the utility disconnection robocall scams or scam calls that someone pretends to be the utility company, calls them and says, we're going to disconnect right now unless you make your payment. We always fear that near that utility shutoff time period or disconnection period, that we'll see a real increase. And when this was starting this summer, until this extension happened, we did start to see an increase. And now that we're, you know, I hate to say it, getting closer to winter, you know,
yeah.
People need their utilities. You know, we're always real nervous that that's going to spike again and someone will fall victim to that scam. That's not the disconnection process in Wisconsin. Your utility company does not call you and demand payment. There is a double notification process that needs to happen. And it's a written process as well. So don't pay attention to any demanding phone call that you have. But again, continue to pay your utility bills when possible. If you're struggling there, reach out to your utility provider, work on payment plans, a communication plan, and see what you can do and what assistance they have available for you.
Yeah. Another story I just found interesting, there was a 17-year-old who was just arrested this past week in regards to a Bitcoin scam. What happened there? Laura, do you know anything about that?
I think Michelle is your go-to person on the. I don't know about the 17-year-old that got arrested. I do know about the celebrity Twitter accounts. Do you, Michelle, know about the 17-year-old?
Yep, and it's all tied together. They did, you know, find the individual who did this, and the amount of money that he made off the scam, and charges are there, and you know, that's that talent that was not used for necessarily positive purposes there, but. You know, we need to just be careful of Bitcoin scams that are out there. And this is just one of those examples where someone was able to hack into well-known celebrity Twitter accounts. And it was a coordinated scam, and it cost consumers thousands of dollars. And it took just a matter of minutes before they were able to gain control of those accounts and shut that off. But messages were posted by the hackers to the accounts encouraging consumers to send thousands of dollars in bitcoins in order to receive a large payment back. So, again, that too-good-to-be-true concept, playing on celebrity, using that electronic, you know, Bitcoin money has been tied to a lot of scams as well. But it's an untraceable form of payment and transfers that are being made there. And so the scammers can disappear with it. Luckily, this was high profile enough, enough money involved, and the federal authorities were able to find the individual and make that arrest here. But it's just another good example of being real cautious and watchful of what's circulating.
And on that happy note, we are out of time today. I want to thank you both so much for being with us. We'll look forward to your next visit. I think it's October 1st is your next show. Thanks, Laura. Thanks, Michelle.
Thanks for having us.
It was great to have you here. And again, they'll be back on October 1st. Michelle Reinen, Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Laura Sutherland is the Administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection within the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Great to have them with us. They'll be back. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, Doug Soldat will be back to talk about healthy lawns and answer your lawn care questions. You can join us at 11. Catch the first hour again at 6 a.m. on Saturday, or go online and listen anytime on our archives. And you can do that for any of the programs, including the one you just heard. Thanks so much for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.